inside the Israeli cabinet, to out-hawk the hawks, and to ignore or discount the dissident element in and out of the Israeli government that are searching for more creative ways to solve the Middle East problems. This appeal by the Quakers was quoted in the book, The New Anti-Semitism, by Forster and Epstein, as an example of an anti-Semitic attitude by the Quakers. In the same book, Forster and Epstein describe the feeling of Jews toward Israel in these words: "For, accepting the Jewish religion itself, Israel represents the greatest hope and the deepest commitment embraced by world Jewry in two millennia. Just as Israel's survival depends in substantial measure on support from Jews in the United States and elsewhere, Jews in the diaspora have come to feel that their own security and the only hope for their survival as a people, in a world from which anti-Semitism has never disappeared, depends in large measure on the survival of Israel," emphasis supplied, in view of the enormous stake which world Jewry has in the survival of Israel. Is it not too important a matter to be left entirely in the hands of whatever politicians happen to be in power when Israel's fate may be decided? Fortunately, in recent years, there has been a change in viewpoint on the part of many Israeli intellectuals and some prominent members of the American Jewish community. They are urging, and, indeed, pleading with American Jewry to use its influence to reverse the course that the Likud government is taking, which they firmly believe can only lead to disaster. These include Abayaban, Simha Flapan, Amos Perlmutter, Yehoshaphat Huckabee, etc., and many other thoughtful and loyal Israelis who are appealing to the American Jewish community to act as true friends of Israel. Many concerned Jews in America recognize that the survival of Israel cannot be taken for granted if the present policies of the Likud government are allowed to continue. Yet, as we have seen, they are intimidated by the Likud from speaking out for fear of being charged with collaborating with the enemy. The consternation and anger of the American Jewish establishment in response to the recent attempt of the Orthodox rabbis to change the law of return, the "who is a Jew" issue, is rooted in the fear that Israel might not be a haven or refuge to the reformed and conservative Jews of America if there should be a revival of anti-Semitism and persecution in the diaspora. There is no doubt that the searing trauma of the Holocaust experience has left an indelible mark on every Jewish soul, often to the point where calm thinking gives way to irrational fears. This is the only explanation, it seems, that could account for the actions of Jewish leaders in rushing to Israel in a panic for fear that the Orthodox rabbis in Israel might change the law of return in a manner that could deny American Jews or their descendants entry into Israel someday. But, clearly, that is not where the danger lies. The right of return is a false promise if there is no place to return to. The American Jewish community is divided on the question of exerting its influence on the Israeli government toward peace. Unfortunately, it seems that a substantial number of Jews in America prefer to leave the matter to Israel, because Israel knows best what is best for Israel. Nothing could be further from the truth. Leaving it to Israel is to leave it to the Likud government and its irrational and irresponsible leadership. The great lesson of the Holocaust is that Jews cannot afford to sit idly by until a threat to their survival gets out of control, and that fanatics and demagogues ought to be feared, not ignored, are being lost in an attitude of dangerous complacency. It is well and good to say never again, but unless prompt action is taken by responsible element of the Jewish community in the US and in Israel, never will soon be here. If it is true, as Santayana is so often quoted as saying, that those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it, Israel, under the Likud, is doomed. Abayaban, in an article in the Jerusalem Post of November 9, 1988, states the case eloquently. He is quoted in part: "There is no need of many words to explain why the 1,500,000 Palestinians and a military rule have an interest in a different condition. They do not have a single one of the conditions that give fulfillment or dignity to a nation's life. It should now be equally apparent that Israeli rule over that vast and growing population weighs no less heavily on the rulers than on the ruled. The present situation endangers our national and individual security, our economy, our international relations, our democratic principles, our Jewish majority, our image in the eyes of the world, our prospect of attaining peace, our probability of avoiding war, our universal Jewish unity, our national consensus, and above all, our most cherished values. It would be reasonable for diaspora Jewish leaders to be longing more passionately and audibly for a Jewish state that will embrace the values which enable diaspora Jews to flourish in freedom. When diaspora Jewish leaders proclaim that American Jews do not care by whom Israel is governed, they sacrifice Jewish principles in behalf of an institutionalized docility that comes close to moral apathy. It is incongruous to imply correctly that diaspora Jews are entitled to combat the attempt to disqualify a majority of the Jewish congregations, rabbis, temples, and ceremonials from the pride of their Jewish identity and then declare indifference about Israel's government. The reluctance on the part of many American Jews to assert their influence upon the Likud government, even though the survival of Israel is at stake, is even more incredible when one considers the character of the Likud leadership. It should be asked, who are these leaders that the non-interventionist Jews are entrusting with the fate of Israel? What credentials do they have for such an awesome responsibility? What wisdom have they shown that they should be elevated above the criticism, advice, or influence of the Jews of the diaspora whose fate is bound up with that of Israel? What justifies this trust and confidence in the Likud that they are left to make these life or death decisions for Israel? Simply stated, Hua Huckabee, former chief of Israeli military intelligence and advisor to Prime Minister Menachem Begin, says that most of the desperate problems which face Israel today are the result of the Begin-Jabotinsky ethos, which has determined Israel's domestic and foreign policies since the Likud assumed power in 1977. He thinks that Begin was incompetent to lead a government and blames the US Friends of Israel for pushing. Begin Huckabee blames Israel's misfortunes directly on the Likud government, and Prime Minister Begin particularly as leader of the Harrit, the center the Likud government presided over a series of great failures, the peace treaty with Egypt, which loomed initially as a great achievement, the Lebanon War, which turned into a fiasco, which has become a quagmire, de facto annexation, Israel's economy, which nearly collapsed, the conduct of politics, that degenerated into demagoguery, the worsening in the relations between various segments of the population, those of North African and Middle Eastern origin, the Sephardim, against those of European backgrounds, the Ashkenazim, as well as religionists against secularists. Generally, the national confidence was undermined by this widespread deterioration of Israel's situation. What caused all these failures? Were they purely accidental and unrelated, or were they all of a piece? Were they the result of unforeseen problems and bad luck, or were they built in? Did they have a common denominator in some erroneous policy? Were the failures rooted in the personalities of the leaders, in their lack of ability or unsuitability for office? Or did they result from a political philosophy, aspects of these leaders' mentality and basic concepts, that influenced both their personalities and their policies? My answer is that there was a common denominator, a misperception of reality or an insufficient regard for it. The accumulation of failures cannot be explained in isolation from the Jabotinsky Begin ethos. They all stemmed from a pattern of thought that was influenced by this ethos, a superficial approach that searched for shortcuts to great accomplishments by means of a single dramatic event or policy, a focusing on intentions instead of outcomes and an exaggerated belief in the power of taken in the aggregate. These failures constituted a veritable national tragedy, since they critically worsened Israel's condition and weakened the basis of its existence. Many Israelis have begun to wonder whether their country can endure, whether the nation can climb down safely from the slippery cliff face to which successive Likud governments have led them. This will depend on recognition by both the public at large and not only by a minority within it of both the severity of the situation and its causes. Recognition that Israel's problems were intensified by its leaders' errors, and not by unavoidable circumstances, will bring energy for change. On the other hand, refusing to recognize the severity of the situation